And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
This time, we will be joining you from Portugal, as we are actually preparing to leave Lisbon to head back home. I believe this was in June of 2014. And we had had quite a number of adventures in Lisbon, wandering around and just exploring the place. And I think we were sitting on a balcony outside our hostel room, which was really awesome. We were, I think, two or three floors up. Mm-hmm. And we were just kind of hearing the sounds of the street in the morning, mm-hmm. and talking about the various things that we did in a rather relaxed manner before we had to run to the airport.
Yeah, it was so funny. I mean, we were reminiscing, and we were right there in the middle of the town and
right
all the
there.
Forms of transportation, and we certainly walked up and down a lot of the areas downtown in Lisbon, and boy, it's a beautiful place, and I'd love to explore more of the countryside there.
Me too. Well, for now, enjoy. This is our Portugal show. Write to us, otw@2600.com.
To open my unnamed.
And with that sound, we begin our conversation here in Lisbon, known to the people as Lisboa in Portugal.
The good people of Lisboa.
They really are good people. And we are in an amazing place. We're sitting on a balcony on the third floor of our hostel. And I don't know, Kyle, you're sitting on... It's really weird. There's like a little concrete slab outside the window, and then there's this this wrought iron, which we can't make a noise with because it's serious. A wrought iron gate around it. But that's the sound of sunglasses hitting it.
Sunglasses are very important in Lisboa.
Yeah, everyone's trying to sell them to you. Well, it's very sunny. In fact, the sun's beating down on us right now, and the sunglasses aren't really helping. The concrete, you're sitting on the concrete slab, which just juts out a little bit from the building.
Dangerously, I might add. I mean, this is something I don't ordinarily do very well with.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's sturdiest part of the building. It's like standing on the floor, but I feel I have my ass sitting on the inside, and for some reason that makes me feel a lot more comfortable. My feet are on the slab, but I'm sitting on the actual inside of the room. The doors fold open, and you can just go out on this little balcony and sort of stare over, like, you know, Rapunzel or whatever. So many places in Europe have these nice little balconies. But when I'm looking across the street at the hotel that we didn't stay at. We're staying at a hostel, not a hotel. They don't have balconies. They spend a lot more for their rooms, and they don't have balconies. And here we are in this really cool hostel, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the same as a hotel. You get everything. We have a private room. We have a bathroom. We have everything we could possibly want. I think the only difference is that when we arrive downstairs, we press a button and somebody buzzes us in, and that's really it, you know?
That is it. That's it. And it's a bit homey, a bit like less, as you said, like less like a hotel, but it works. That's the important part. Those are the kind of gems you find. You enjoy being across from the big behemoth place, knowing that, yeah, there's just a couple people in your place, and they're okay. They said, hey, you know, check out whenever you feel like checking out, or this or that. It's just really, you build a bit of a relationship with a small business owner instead of this being a part of this faceless thing. And I gotta say, in Lisboa, it's hard to not be a tourist. And yeah. When you go to a big hotel, you're just sort of playing right into that. And at least this feels like, wow, we're part of a smaller scene of travelers.
But we tried to do things that were non-touristy. But yeah, you're right. It is hard because we wanted to ride the old tram, the old number 28 or the 15, or basically this tram that looks like it was built in the 1800s. It's a single car. It looks really out of place. Actually, not in these streets. The cobblestone streets going up steep hills. It fits right in, but it really looks very, very old. It is very, very old. But, of course, all the tourists want to ride that thing. And then the funiculars, which are basically trams that go up very steep hills, you want to ride those as well, and people are taking pictures of that. And then just sitting in cafes, of course, everybody comes up to you wanting to peddle something. What kinds of things did we were we offered as we were either walking through squares or sitting at cafes?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's pretty rough when you want to just kind of soak up the actual town and sort of try to get a feel for the local way of life.
Can I sell you some sunglasses?
No, I've got sunglasses.
I see you have sunglasses. I have more sunglasses. Can I sell you
sunglasses? I don't need sunglasses.
But, you have more sunglasses. Can I sell you 5 sunglasses? They're very persistent. They don't know the word no.
Yeah, they don't. And if it isn't that they're selling you something, it's that they've got a cause, either for children that are on some picture they're holding up, or they've got a condition, one disability or another, that you need to take pity upon them. And
let's be specific. You had a woman come up to you and say, "Give me change," you know, without really any...
She just had this meepish, I don't know the word to use. Just,
that's a good word.
Just very, you know, pity, yes. And she was just mumbling or saying something. I don't even know what language. And then finally she just broke into English, "Give me change." And I did not like that. And I rebuffed, rebuked, and basically...
You said a word we can't say on the radio. But, you know, I understand why, and I feel the same thing, because it gets very annoying when people are just so persistent and demanding, and it sounds callous, but there are just so many people coming up wanting handouts and wanting things. And, yeah, and you mentioned people with physical disabilities. There's a guy, you know, we'll be specific, there's a guy who kind of walks around like a spider because there's something wrong with his leg, and he basically, we just saw him a little while ago, he just hangs out in the same area day after day collecting money because he's crippled, and that's horrible. It's sad, but I don't feel compelled to go up to every single person that is begging for money. I'd rather try to fix the system somehow.
Absolutely. It completely dilutes the concept of charity and giving, and it's hard at first, but you get kind of you get that thick skin going, because absolutely every time you turn a corner, somebody's trying to sell you something. And then the real kicker is if they're not actually selling what they're selling, and you'll get what I mean after a little while. So it would start out maybe, I'll explain. It would start out maybe, okay, I want to sell you some sunglasses, right? And then you say, no, and they're following you a little bit. Oh, where are you from? But it quickly, or maybe immediately turns into, do you want some drugs? Like, they'll say, hashish, marijuana. Sometimes they won't even be selling glasses or anything. They'll just be a guy standing somewhere, and that's basically what they whisper to you as you walk around the corner. Hashish, marijuana, cocaine.
Look at that van full of police officers. That must be at 12 police officers in that blue van. I wonder where they're going.
And that's another thing, that because of, I think, that, the selling of drugs, there's equal parts police officers on foot and in riot vans. And it seems to be this sort of standoff, this, like, constant... drug sale, like open market, with a constant kind of vigilance to just make sure it doesn't get too out of control.
But, you know, I never see those cops in the same place as the place they're always selling the drugs, which is really kind of weird. We have people walking up to us, they're showing us what they have, the pot, hashish, you know, this nice envelope. And you have the theory that that's just a demo that they have, that's probably not even real, and that what you actually get is a minuscule version of that, and probably... not very high quality or whatever. They're selling cocaine, everything you can imagine, just as you walk down. And it all starts with sunglasses.
All, you know, to say nothing of the prospect of getting robbed or otherwise involved in some kind of hustle or altercation where somehow they're wronged, and then, you know, a whole bunch of them with some whistle or something happens. You really never know. So it's best to kind of avoid the sunglasses, avoid the whispers of drug sales, and kind of stick to your guns and walk with purpose. But there are so many tourists, even when you're trying to just get to where you're going or walk casually but avoid things, you still feel like you stick out. And that, for me, was really something I struggled with, because I really like to blend in. I like to go off the beaten path. I don't want to be a part of a big tourist machine. And I understand that's a big part of the city here. A lot of people want to come and see Lisboa, but it's tough for somebody who really likes to get off the path, as I said, and get in with the native culture. You just can't kind of break past that, because everybody's from somewhere doing something crazy.
Yeah, it's harder for us to kind of blend in and be Portuguese. And when you walk down the street, I guess they try all different languages. Bonjour, hola, hello. But they didn't say anything in German, so we're pretending to be German. And we say Guten Tag, and that sort of seems to work and keep them at bay for a little while. Until
Nein, bitte.
Yeah, until they, if they pick that language up, then we can pretend to be Czech or something, or I don't know. But, you know, let's not just focus on the things that annoy us, because there are so many things here that did not annoy us. I don't want to give the wrong impression. First of all, we pretty much do these things hardcore. We walked all around the city the first day we were here, mostly because we didn't want to just keep hopping on the metro. Not that there was very many metro stops that we could find. We just wanted to sort of get a feel for it. We got more of a feel for it than I think we intended, because we just walked up these big hills and just saw these little streets. And then the next day, when we got a day pass and we were riding trams all over the place, we saw all the streets that we had walked down and realized that we had pretty much walked around the entire city, which is no small feat when you consider how hilly the terrain is around here, and how many different little windy, curvy streets there are. So I was impressed with that. It's so incredibly scenic and historical. I mean, we were in a church yesterday that was built in the 12th century, the 1100s. Think about that.
Amazing.
Yeah, that truck is going to tip over. Look at that.
Wow.
It's
oh
a truck
my gosh.
Driving up on the curb. I swear it's going to tip right over. And yeah, we have somebody shouting down the street. It's a very vocal city. A lot of people shouting and singing and arguing, but it's also very relaxing in a strange way.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always something going on.
There's the old tram. I don't know if you could hear that.
Absolutely. There's stuff going on every corner, whether it's somebody yelling or an altercation of some kind. Really interesting people. We talk about this, I think, but there's a lot of characters. And that, again, goes right along with the city, the picturesque scenery. And I think the town itself, being a port town, has a huge mix. And so there's a lot of character just to it in general, whether it's the old trams that go around on these really very cramped streets that maybe you could only get a couple motorcycles through.
Yeah.
It's amazing and really fun to explore. And yeah, it was good on foot to check out first, and then we researched enough and figured out, okay, so if we're going to make a transit day, let's do the whole thing. Let's get the day pass and really use it and really explore the metro, which I think was worthwhile.
And the metro includes the trams and the buses. In fact, we got on, we missed a tram stop. We wanted to get off at the top by the castle. We missed a stop. We went down one stop too many, so we got off. That's when we explored the church. But then we were waiting for a tram to go back up the hill, and instead we found this little minibus that apparently our passes were good on those as well. So then we got on that minibus, and then that minibus made a left turn and went further up the hill, and we went all the way to the top. And that was really cool, because we had no idea we could do that. And the other thing that's really cool, you mentioned we got the day pass. It's actually a 24-hour pass. Our day pass might still be good now for our metro to the airport. And the metro goes right to the airport. So it'd be kind of cool if we could still use that day pass to get... although, what might happen, I'm not quite sure about this, it's an RFID system, which I think one day New York will have. You basically, you have the card, you just sort of place it on the turnstile, light turns green, hopefully, you go in, but then you have to do that on the way out as well. I'm thinking it might expire while we're in the system. That 24 hours since we got the ticket, it might happen then. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do if that happens.
Well, all the more reason for us to get on our way here, but it is a really interesting system. I'm holding the card in my hand right now, and it is a contactless system. It's RFID. It's these paper tickets, and if you hold them up to light, you can see the coil for an antenna, and then there's a very small bump where there is a chip, and that stores data. So when you're loading them, you just put them in a slot that is, I think, in a field within the machine, and that, as you select whatever, maybe day pass, maybe just one trip, as you pay for those things, it then encodes it or re-encodes it, and you're able to use it as you wish for a day. And every single thing we got on, like you said, the funiculars, the trams, the metro itself, the bus, it was amazing. But they all have the little readers, and with the day pass, all it does is it clicks, yeah, okay, green light, and you're good. And it's really, really neat to have that power, and definitely worth the money.
What I found amazing was that the first day we were here, we were complaining about how much of a ripoff it was. Because we were just using individual tickets. We had just arrived at the train station at 7:30 in the morning, the overnight train from Spain. And by the way, let me amend my comments from when I was in Spain about how the rails are nice and smooth in Europe. Boy, they aren't when you're going from Spain to Portugal. It was bouncy city, and I had a lot of trouble falling asleep. I think we were right above the wheel, too, so that didn't help. But we arrived in Lisbon at about 7:30 in the morning, not really all that refreshed. And the first thing we did was hop on the metro, and that's €1.40 to ride on the metro. And then if you get off and walk around a bit and get back on, another €1.40. And we basically were looking for interesting things while we were waiting to check in, because we couldn't check in until 12:30, so we had 5 hours to walk around. We saw all these old Porsches for some reason had driven it, maybe about 100 Porsches. How old were they?
Oh, man, I think this model was from mid-20th century, like 50s and 60s. I don't know that for sure. They were all in gorgeous shape, and when you have antique cars you're not familiar with, they look brand new.
And what model were they?
These were Porsche 356.
Okay, and you saw three of them and said, hey, look, there's three old Porsches in a row. I'm like, wow, what are the odds of that? And then we just kept seeing more and more. I'm sure we saw at least 100 of them driving through the city. It turned out there's some kind of international Porsche thing going on right when we were there. We'd not have seen that had we not been walking around at that particular time. But what we decided to do was, I looked it up on my phone. We found out where they were all having lunch, and it was at some hotel. So I plugged it into my phone through Google. I said, okay, metro stop near that hotel. And this is where Google and I part ways. On the little summary thing, first of all, the webpage wouldn't load, so I had to look at the little summary thing. It said, here's that hotel, metro stop there. But in actuality, what that was quoting from a page where somebody mentioned the hotel, then somebody else mentioned the metro stop. They had nothing to do with each other. And so we got off of this metro stop, and we were like, where the hell is the hotel? It was nowhere near there. It was like 15 miles away. So then we got back on the metro, and guess what? We had to pay another $1.40, and that's when we were really getting a little embittered at the metro system, saying, you know what, let's avoid this thing. And that's why we walked around the city for most of the day. But the next day, instead of spending $1.40 for every single ride, we paid €6 for the entire day. And like you said, we were able to ride everything, and it just felt so much better. So yeah, day passes, they're a good deal if you use them and take advantage of them. And I think we certainly did.
You'd never get those results if you used Baidu.
Say again?
You'd never get those results if you used Baidu.
Baidu. What does that mean?
Baidu, the Chinese search engine.
Oh, I haven't heard of them. Okay.
You probably wouldn't get the results at all, actually, but...
Why would I be using a Chinese search engine?
Well, I wasn't going to name another American search engine.
Look, there's another old tram.
We're for diversity. We want to expand, and... Yeah, Google failed with some of those results, and we were thwarted in many ways from basically inaccurate results. There were many times we were looking just for a place to eat. Very simple desire to eat. And you would find a place, oh, wow, this is it. This is the spot. It's 4.8 stars out of 5. Wow. And it's this great food. And, well, it's really close by. Let's go. Let's go do it. And permanently closed. We would have other places that were not there at all, completely redone into like a bar, a karaoke bar or something.
This is something that I think search engines really need to work on. You type in something, right, in a search engine, say, you know, the Russian Tea Room or something. You want to see, is this a good place to go? And then you get results, but the results aren't sorted by date. They really aren't. In fact, you have things from 2006, things that are so hopelessly outdated. The prices are wrong, the location is wrong, whether or not it's open is wrong. And I think, you know, things should basically be kind of weeded out after they become really old, or if they have not been, say, maybe a flag to say, yes, this data is still good. Okay, it doesn't matter if it was written so long ago, but I've confirmed this data is still good. You don't get that right now, and you wind up looking at old data, and very often it's a waste of time.
They're really really stark reminders that search and technology in general is just barely at the beginning. We're using these tools, we almost take it for granted, but when it fails you, when there's something that comes up, you're quickly reminded that these things are fledgling. They're just in their infancy, and sometimes it's better to just put the thing away and lift your chin up and look around and do it the old way.
Yeah, you know, we were looking for a movie yesterday, just for the fun of it, and I typed in, and you know, I even let my smartphone know where I was, against my better judgment, just so that we wouldn't keep having these misunderstandings. But it didn't stop it, because I was looking for theaters in Lisbon, and I got really good directions to the theater in Lisbon, Ohio, which if we start now, we can be at in a few weeks. And no, it's not what I was looking for, and really, I think that, you know, whatever processing power I had should have been able to figure that out. Whatever service I was using should have figured that out.
Absolutely.
So we have, we're actually flying out of here today, and that's a little weird, too, because our airline is kind of messing with us, I think. I don't mind saying, we flew TAP, which is Portugal, TAP Airlines Portugal.
Transporta Portugal.
Okay,
something.
If you say so.
Transportes.
Yeah. It was what we wound up doing, and since we're flying out of Portugal, it makes the most sense. We did the check-in, the online check-in, and I noticed that the flight time had changed. It was supposed to fly out at 1:20, and it says 2:15. And then they didn't send us our boarding passes. And then when I checked again, it said 1:10. It's like they can't seem to figure out when this plane's going to take off, and I don't know if we're checked in or not. I have a web page that says we're checked in, but I don't have the email that was supposed to contain our boarding passes. And even if I did have that email, I don't have a way to print that out. We're going through that challenge again. So it's going to be a little dicey. But we're just a few feet away from a metro. We're going to hop on that. That takes us right to the airport. So we're prepared to do battle there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really feel like we got a great sense of it. It was an interesting stay here in Lisbon and in this part of the world in general. We got as close as I think we ever could to Africa on this trip by heading down to Granada.
Well, as close as we could on this, yeah, on this trip.
Yeah.
It's not that we're averse to going to Africa. We will definitely do that, and we want to.
Lots of African influence and people.
Our waiter yesterday. That's
a train.
That's the tourist tram. It is the tourist tram.
It is.
That's our passes wouldn't have worked on that. You have to pay extra for that. It's not even as good. But yeah, our waiter yesterday at lunch was Nigerian, and we were talking about the World Cup and how he wants Nigeria to win. And I said, yeah, I'd love for an African team to win. That would be so awesome. But you know, I also would like Portugal to win. Although you know, I have mixed feelings about Cristiano Ronaldo. We were at the in Madrid during the Real Atletico match, and he just seemed like he had this entitlement thing going on, and he could not keep his damn shirt on when he scored a goal, and it kind of annoyed me. But he is Portuguese. He's going to be playing for the Portuguese national team. I'm sure by the time this airs, the World Cup will be over. So let me say now that I think this might be Portugal's year.
Yeah, very well could be.
What do you like?
I'm impartial. I don't really have a team.
That's a safe thing to say, yes.
Well, I would say that, huh? Seahawks.
all right, Kyle likes the Seahawks in the World Cup, and there you go. Hey, look, it's a beat cop. There's lots of beat cops here.
Yes, and he has a beat stick.
That's what they're for, I guess. I don't know if that's how they got the name, but it's one of the many interesting little customs that they have here, customs we used to have.
Yeah, absolutely, and it'd be interesting and probably shocking in a lot of suburban and small cities of America to see police officers actually get out of their cars.
Yeah. And you thought you still think that they don't have radios. The cops here don't have radios.
You know, I don't see them with handheld radios. I believe that they're sort of trusted to deal with something immediately and use a phone. Perhaps some of them have radios. Maybe the cars have radios. But a lot of the guys walking around just have enormous guns and sticks and handcuffs and gloves and these things on their belt. But I didn't see any kind of radio, any kind of earpiece, nothing like that. So it seems like they're very much the authority in any given part, like nook and cranny of the city. And they find a way to get in touch. And perhaps they have something in their phone programmed or whatnot. But with phones everywhere, I guess it's a safe enough way to keep people out and visible, but also in touch.
Maybe the phone is the radio. Maybe there's like an app or something that turns it into a radio. I don't know. I just find it kind of bizarre that a cop would not just have a radio on him at all times. If you're a Portuguese listener, or maybe if you're a Portuguese policeman listening, please let us know. We'd like to know if there are radios attached to the police here in Lisbon. I think they must have them someplace. It just seems bizarre that you'd walk around and maybe get in trouble and not be able to, what are you going to dial a phone number? It's just cops press buttons and say officer needs assistance and things like that. In Portuguese, yeah, they'd say it, but
it's incredibly cumbersome and surprising for them not to have that. In fact, I've seen more radios with tram drivers and metro drivers than I've seen with police, and there are a lot of them walking around. So all sorts of interesting experiences we've had here and interactions and great vantage points. It's again a port town, so we were able to get up and see the bay, the water, the ocean. I'm a little bit regretful that we didn't get to a beach and maybe get out on the water on a ferry or a boat of some kind. But again, with this trip, I think we just got a taste. We got a feel for how it works, what's involved, what it takes to get your sea legs and explore and get functional in places like this. And certainly we'll have to make some efforts to explore more, maybe get a bit further from the cities of this size, the main cities that there are a lot of people, and just get a bit more toward the smaller towns and villages out and outlying regions.
Yeah, it's been something. And also, you know, the other thing I feel compelled to point out is that we've been kind of working while we're doing this as well, because this is a period where we're organizing a conference. And it's like we never left, because we're spending as much time answering emails and making decisions and things like that. Plus, it has been deadline month for a new issue of the magazine. Been working on that. It just, what this means is you can work on things almost anywhere. And I think I'm spending about as much leisure time here as I would back home, doing whatever I would do when I'm not working. Now that some of that is out of the way, well, actually after the conference, I'd like to actually relax and go someplace and not have to work at the same time, because that's what a true vacation is. I don't consider this a vacation. I consider this traveling and meeting various people that we have to talk to about various business-related things, but also enjoying the scenery around us, which has been simply incredible. And, you know, we had to go to certain cities to make connections, and we happened to be flying out of Lisbon, so we have to be in Lisbon. But we only spent 2 days here, and I regret that. I'd like to spend 10 days here. I'd like to spend 10 days in Granada and Madrid and Barcelona and places like that.
And stay with people that know us or that we've met or have contacted us. We always love to hear from people, so please write in otw@2600.com Because a homestay, there's no replacement for that. Being out with someone who knows you, who has that kind of local knowledge, and can really bring you, thrust you right into what it means to be a citizen of the area. You can only do so much exploring on your own, and when you have that connection, it really helps. So anyway, we've familiarized ourselves, and we'd be interested to hear from people that might have some insight and just what next to do when we come back.
Or new places to go, or interesting things to see. I love that siren. That siren I like. Why don't we have that siren in the States? What would happen? What would happen if, say, perhaps some firemen, some places listening to us, if a particular fire department or an ambulance or a police department had that siren? It would certainly get attention, and people would say, hey, that's so worldly. That's so, I feel like I'm in Europe, you know, and it would be just kind of cool, rather than the same boring sirens we have. Is it illegal to have that siren? And you know what? If cops don't have that siren, can I have that siren? Can I use that as, say, my car horn or something? I want that sound in the United States. There, I said it. You know what else I want in the United States? I want international no parking signs. Those are simply circles with slashes through them. What's the color scheme?
Blue and red.
So it's a blue background with a slash going through it in red. There's a circle on a red slash. That means no parking. If it's an X, like the one we're looking at right now, that means no standing or no stopping. And that's international. Almost every country in the world knows what that means, and we don't.
And international speedometer, speed limit sign.
Kilometers, thank you. Celsius, things like that. Why? Why don't we just participate?
I'm really curious about what you said with the siren, because I would be interested. I know it's illegal to have a siren. You can't use a siren, an American siren, but what if you had a Polish siren?
You can't use the type of siren that we use as police cars.
Yeah, the typical Western Whale and Hyper Whale or Hyper Yelp and all of those. You can't really use those unless it's like in a parade or something, I think.
You know, all these things have names. The types of sirens have names. We need to learn what those are.
Yeah, I want to know what the European sirens are called, because I know it's Yelp, Hyper Yelp, Whale. Those are kind of the typical Western ones. Are they the same in a European emergency services car? I mean, is it the same names, or do they call them something different? Is there an international standard for sirens?
You know, what are people experimenting with? Maybe your country uses something completely different that no one else uses. We'd like to hear your siren. Maybe some ideas for future sirens.
Well, maybe we could we make our own siren? Could we make a hacker siren? So it's just MF tones or some amalgamation of old telephone sounds that we reproduce in something completely new, and we just use it for hacker emergencies.
You know, and New York City police, they've been using, and the ambulances now too, have been using those deeper resonant sirens. I don't like those because they're very intrusive.
Absolutely. There's a lot with just that subject that I have a lot of curiosity about, and it'd be really interesting if someone has some insight, if they could educate us and give us an idea of how that all works and what standards. What could we look at? Is there a sort of international database? Can you register different sounds like that?
Who invented the siren in the first place? I'd like to know that. The history of the siren. When was the first siren emitted? And then there's the lunch siren, the 12 o'clock noon siren, the fire siren, the rescue siren, the air raid siren. That's, you know, I read about this. We can talk about anything, can't we? I read about air raid sirens, and we don't have that in the States, really. I mean, we had a period in the 50s where we were supposedly all obsessed about that. But the all clear sounded. How do you know what an all clear sounds like when it's a siren? Everyone in the world seems to know this, but I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. Oh yeah, that's all clear. I can go out. We're not gonna get bombed now. There's a whole language.
Some are really terrifying. I believe Homer first wrote about sirens.
All right. Yeah, I think you might have something there. As another old tram passes underneath us. Hey, you know, we should probably think about getting to the airport. We don't want to miss our flight.
And then there's that weird Dutch siren. There's so many
things. Oh, yeah. You know, we have to record that sometime.
We should find a recording.
I think it's on the first Monday of every month they test their air raid sirens.
It's so jarring.
We just happen to be waking up, and we just heard the siren going off for many sirens going off for several minutes.
It's the evilest, darkest, most just terrifying sound.
Yeah. And once a month they test it. It's kind of interesting. But, you know, I do think we should try and make our plans. We're not quite sure when it's leaving. And you know, I didn't talk about my previous airport experience. Let me just say it very briefly because I don't want to end on negativity. But, man, we had to get somewhere fast. I don't like doing this. I don't like using intercity airlines. I mean, I know they're cheaper. I know they're faster. But you do pay for it in other ways. I use airplanes to go long distances. But even that, I prefer to go the slower way if possible.
I think, are you referring to our experience on Sleazy Jet?
Yeah, I'll say Easy Jet. I'm not afraid. Let them come after me. They're the ones. They're the ones that caused all manner of problems. We were simply trying to get from... Where were we starting from? We were flying into Barcelona from...
Basel, Switzerland.
That's right, Basel, Switzerland. We had to do this, didn't really want to. They suddenly pull this thing after we've checked in everything that, you can't take your computer bag on board because that counts as another bag. Even though this is something that I always carry with me, slide under the seat in front of me, not a big deal. And they say, no, you have to pay €55 right now to check that. And I just don't like being ripped off. And these people, it's clear on their website, every little thing they charge you for. They say, okay, pick a seat. It's going to cost you €5 no matter what seat you pick. Or don't pick a seat. Well, you're not doing it at the airport. But they con you into doing that. If they could charge you to go to the bathroom, they would. And so, yeah, they pull this thing as we're boarding the airplane. No, you can't take that. You have to pay €55 right now. And I just went ballistic. I don't go ballistic very often, but I had to go ballistic then because they were basically telling me that to carry my laptop on board would cost €55. Thank God you were around, Kyle, because what we did was we simply stuffed everything into our other bags. It wasn't hard to do, but it was ridiculous because we weren't taking any more space. It was just their way of hoodwinking us and trying to make us pay practically the cost of a flight. I mean, the flight was cheap, yeah, but it was a miserable flight. And I told you at the beginning, this is probably going to be the most miserable flying experience you ever had because these guys have a reputation, and now you know why they have a reputation, because of the way they treat their passengers. They were just so rude and obnoxious, and I will go toe-to-toe with them in any arena to make that point. I've never been treated so badly. And you know what else? When we arrived, they got us so crazy. They were telling you that your bag had to go. First of all, they made us so late getting on the plane. We were the last ones on. So there wasn't room for the bag that you were putting in the overhead area. So they were making you move all the way to the back. And it's the camera. We don't want the camera to be out of our sight.
Or thrown around in the belly of the aircraft.
So we were all kind of discombobulated. And we wound up leaving something on the plane that we needed, an important part of the camera. You realize this as soon as you got off the plane, and you said, I have to go back and get this. It's under the seat. They wouldn't let you back on the plane. They wouldn't go. They wouldn't go and get it. They were so eager to get new people onto the plane without even cleaning it, without even inspecting it. It's like a train. They I've never seen an airplane land and not be cleaned out before they let the new people in. But literally, we got off, new people got on. And so we're trying to get them to get the important piece of equipment that we left on the plane. They would not do it. Said, well, you can go to Lost and Found. And I was like, Lost and Found? No, this isn't Lost and Found. This is theft. You're taking it from us. You are stealing our equipment. And it got us absolutely nowhere. So folks, never, never, never fly EasyJet or any other airline that treats you like crap. That's why I like trains. That's why I like space. We get on a train, and yeah, you know, in Spain, because they had some terrorist incidents, they make you put your bags through a little x-ray thing. Takes a second, no big deal. And you can walk around, you can stretch, you can sleep, you can do all sorts of things, and you can see the countryside. Takes longer. It's so much better. It's so much better. And that's pretty much all I have to say on that subject.
Yes, we could easily elaborate, but it is time, and off we go.
Yeah, now we have to go to another airport, but I think this one will be more pleasant. We can actually carry bags onto this plane.
Absolutely.
All right, from Lisbon, Lisboa, it's farewell, and I hope to see this place again.
Likewise. I really enjoyed myself here, and can't wait to get back. We've got other adventures ahead of us, other parts of North America, perhaps Asia, and other continents even.
But let me once again say, I think this is the year for Portugal and World Cup and Brazil. Anybody agree down there? Yeah, they agree. See, I'm getting thumbs up and fist in the air. Oh, no, they were angry. I insulted them. Uh-oh.
Oh, no, but that kid over there, he's smiling. He's jumping up and down. He's got both yeah. No, he approves.
He's on a pogo stick.
Oh, you're right. He is.
Okay. All right. Airport bound.
No hands. Wow.
When I was young, I never needed anyone.
Antena 1, Liga Portugal.
Meia-noite no continente e na Madeira, são 11 horas nos Açores.
Dezenas de mortos na Nigéria, mais um ataque atribuído ao Boko Haram. Desta vez a bomba explodiu no meio de um campo de futebol. Ana Drago propôs ao Bloco um diálogo com outras formações de esquerda. A proposta foi recusada. Ana Drago diz-se preocupada com o futuro do seu partido e do país.
Para esta segunda-feira, o Instituto Português de Mar e da Atmosfera prevê para o continente céu pouco nublado ou limpo, mais nuvens no litoral a norte do Cabo Raso até ao início da manhã e também para o fim do dia. Algumas nuvens durante a tarde no interior, descida da temperatura máxima no litoral oeste e subida no interior centro e sul. Na Madeira, períodos de céu muito nublado, apresentando-se pouco nublado nas vertentes sul. Já nas vertentes norte são esperados aguaceiros fracos, em especial até ao fim da manhã. Nos Açores, períodos de céu muito nublado, com boas abertas. A esta hora, 15 graus no Porto, 16 em Lisboa, estão 19 no Funchal e em Ponta Delgada, 21 na cidade de Faro. Simultâneo Antena 1 RDP Internacional, RDP África, Antena 1 Madeira e Antena 1 Açores. Edição de Olívia Santos.
Já lhe dou conta da entrevista de Ana Drago à Antena 1 esta noite. Para já, Nigéria, o número de pessoas mortas não é ainda certo. A agência de notícias France Press fala em mais de 40 vítimas de um atentado à bomba entre os que assistiam a um jogo de futebol. Foi na cidade de Mubi, no nordeste da Nigéria. Segundo a polícia local, a bomba explodiu no meio do campo onde decorreu a partida de futebol. O atentado não foi ainda reivindicado, mas tudo indica tratar-se de mais uma ação dos radicais islâmicos do Boko Haram. O número de vítimas, 40, é confirmado pelo hospital local à France Press, que não adiantou, no entanto, se os jogadores estão entre as vítimas mortais, sendo que é adiantado que a maioria das pessoas atingidas são espectadores que entraram no campo, pois a partida tinha acabado de terminar. Até agora, Mubi esteve entre as cidades menos atacadas pelo Boko Haram em comparação com outras na mesma zona do país, isto nos últimos tempos, mas foi em Mubi, precisamente, que em 2012 foram massacrados 40 estudantes dentro da cidade universitária. O grupo Boko Haram tem sido responsável por inúmeros ataques mortíferos na Nigéria. Em abril, raptou mais de 200 raparigas de uma escola que até agora não foram encontradas. Acusado de assassinato, tentativa de assassinato, porte e transporte de armas, foi detido hoje um francês de 29 anos, suspeito de ter cometido o ataque mortífero há uma semana no Museu Judaico em Bruxelas. Medine Mouche já tinha sido preso 5 vezes, na maioria dos casos por roubo. Ter-se-á radicalizado na última detenção e depois de ter partido para a Síria para se juntar a combatentes islâmicos. A polícia gaulesa, Silvia Mestrinho, tem poucas dúvidas de que se trata do autor do crime de Bruxelas.
Entre as várias pistas que a polícia francesa encontrou, há uma que parece ser fundamental. Um vídeo em que se ouve uma voz a assumir o ataque ao Museu Judaico de Bruxelas e a explicar que a gravação foi feita porque, durante o tiroteio, a câmara que deveria gravar o atentado não funcionou. Estes detalhes foram agora avançados pelo procurador-chefe de Paris, François Molin, que esclarece que quem está a filmar nunca aparece nas imagens, mas que a voz será coincidente com a do suspeito hoje detido. Medinemos tem 29 anos, foi hoje interceptado em Marselha num autocarro que chegava de Amsterdão e tinha consigo uma câmara, uma espingarda automática tipo Kalashnikov e uma pistola semelhante à usada no atentado da semana passada. O suspeito já tinha estado preso 5 vezes, na maioria dos casos por roubo, e terá sido numa dessas passagens pela prisão que se terá radicalizado, passando depois pela Síria. Aliás, esta ligação a grupos islâmicos radicais preocupa François Hollande. Na sequência desta detenção, o presidente francês assume que os combatentes estrangeiros na Síria são uma dor de cabeça para as autoridades europeias.
Fazemos tudo para que esses jihadistas...
Faremos tudo para que estes jihadistas, e existem cerca de 700 no nosso país que estiveram ou que ainda estão, sejam seguidos e impedidos de causar distúrbios, especialmente no regresso à França ou à Europa.
Lá onde eles são, notamente quando revêm, em França ou em Europa.
No atentado ao Museu Judaico de Bruxelas, no dia 24 de maio, morreram 3 pessoas e uma outra ficou gravemente ferida. A Bélgica deverá agora pedir a Paris a extradição de Medine Mouche.
Para já está preso em França, tem 29 anos, este francês Medine Mouche, que é o principal suspeito do ataque em Bruxelas, no Museu Judaico, há uma semana, que vitimou mortalmente 3 pessoas. A Mesa Nacional do Bloco de Esquerda chumbou este domingo por 10 votos uma proposta de Ana Drago para o início de diálogos com o Movimento 3D, o Livre e o PAN, no sentido de uma convergência à esquerda. Esta noite, em declarações à jornalista Sílvia Mestrinho, Ana Drago explicou porque é que propôs esta iniciativa.
A esquerda, na sua pluralidade, tem uma responsabilidade acrescida de responder à vida das pessoas. É insustentável não ter uma proposta para o país e, nesse sentido, eu creio que é fundamental que se estabeleça um espaço tão abrangente quanto possível de debate com os intervenientes que estão disponíveis para esse debate com o Bloco. Eu penso que foi sempre esse o desafio que o Bloco lançou no campo político e à sociedade portuguesa, e portanto é preciso reganhar esse campo, e estou portanto preocupada que o Bloco decida pelo menos adiar o debate sobre a convergência à esquerda e a capacidade de criar esse programa para daqui a 6 meses.
Ana Drago confirma que foram ainda chumbadas 2 propostas de antecipação da próxima Convenção Nacional do Partido, apresentadas com o objetivo de acelerar a tomada de decisões internas. O Bloco marcou uma convenção nacional para novembro. Ora, hoje, no rescaldo das eleições europeias e dos maus resultados do Bloco, que ficou em 5º lugar, João Semedo garantiu que a questão da liderança não foi sequer colocada. Ana Drago não quer individualizar, mas diz que a estratégia tem de ser outra.
Eu não acho que hoje a questão seja sobre os dirigentes protagonistas do Bloco de Esquerda, nomeadamente a coordenação A2, não creio que seja esse o debate neste momento interessa. Interessa um debate que permita credibilizar uma proposta alternativa para o país. Não estamos a discutir estilos de comunicação, pessoas, estamos a discutir uma estratégia. Creio mesmo que as dificuldades que o Bloco teve nestes últimos processos eleitorais são uma ausência de estratégia, ou seja, como se o Bloco sozinho conseguisse responder à situação do país. Eu quero que as pessoas percebem que isso não é assim e, portanto, o Bloco é insuficiente. É necessário outras forças, uma maior abrangência e uma maior convergência.
O Bloco tem de mudar, ficou provado mais uma vez nas eleições europeias, opinião transmitida esta noite à Antena 1 por Ana Drago. José Sócrates não concorda com diretas no PS, muito menos nesta altura. No comentário semanal na RTP este domingo, o ex-primeiro-ministro pronunciou sobre a proposta de António José Seguro de eleger o candidato do partido a primeiro-ministro através de eleições diretas.
O candidato a primeiro-ministro não é apenas escolhido pelos militantes, é escolhido pelos militantes e pelos simpatizantes do Partido Socialista. Olha, eu sempre tive uma visão muito prudente quanto a estas inovações e estas alterações muito criativas da vida política interna dos partidos, em particular em momentos críticos, em momentos de urgência e em momentos de aflição e de pânico. Não é bom, conselheiro, este ambiente em que nós temos um problema político e, para resolver este problema político, arranjamos uma forma criativa de o resolver.
Não gosta da solução ou não gosta do timing em que ela é apresentada?
Eu não gosto da solução, mas parece muito pior neste tempo.
A proposta foi colocada ontem por António José Seguro, diretas no PS. Hoje a direção do partido, este domingo, esclareceu em comunicado que não vai ser preciso alterar estatutos para avançar com este método. No mesmo comunicado, a direção do PS diz que António José Seguro se demitirá se perder as diretas que visam escolher apenas o candidato do partido a primeiro-ministro. Uma situação desencadeada depois de António Costa se ter perfilado para disputar a liderança do partido. Ora, esta noite na TV, Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa fez também o seu comentário semanal e deu conta da enorme perturbação que foi para o governo o anúncio de António Costa.
Essa coligação levou dois pontapés esta semana. Quando estava a respirar, apanha com o Tribunal Constitucional. Uma. E apanha com o Costa. Foi Costa à terça, Tribunal Constitucional à sexta. Bom, Costa, obviamente, não imagina os telefonemas que sucederam. E não imagina a perturbação que foi nos espíritos dos dirigentes da Aliança Portugal, ou do Governo, se melhor quiser, com o avanço de Costa.
Sim.
Como quem diz, isto não pode ser verdade, isto é mentira. Isto.
Então estão cheios de medo?
Eu não direi cheios de medo, mas estão muito mais preocupados do que estavam. Isto é, se pudessem votar nas primeiras em Seguro, eu acho que iam todos óculos escuros e devíamos para o Portas de barba e bigode, óculos escuros, a votar Seguro, como quer dizer, por amor de Deus, o Costa, não. Não!
Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa assim a dar conta esta noite na TVI da enorme perturbação que foi para a coligação governamental o anúncio de António Costa de querer disputar a liderança do Partido Socialista. Ginástica, Filipa Martins conquistou hoje a medalha de ouro no solo e Diana Abrantes conseguiu a de prata na trave. Vitórias na Taça do Mundo de Ana Dia em ginástica artística. Isto depois da prata em paralelas assimétricas e do bronze já conseguido na prova de saltos. Palmas para Portugal, que totaliza assim 4 medalhas na Taça do Mundo de ginástica artística.
Edição de Olívia Santos, simultâneo Antena 1, RDP Internacional, RDP África, Antena 1 Madeira e Antena 1 Açores. Toda a informação em permanência em antena1.rtp.pt.
Jorge Palma, em digressão acústica.
No bairro do amor, a vida é um carrossel.
Os grandes temas de 40 anos de canções ao vivo.
Se alguma vez te parecer.
Dia 6 de junho, no Cineteatro de Ourém. E 7 de junho, no Centro Cultural de Viana do Castelo.
Deixa-me rir.
Um concerto, Antena 1. A cada passo da nossa seleção, a cada bater do coração, a cada momento de orgulho, estamos juntos na televisão, na rádio, na internet. Porque aos 11 que estão em campo, juntam-se milhões espalhados pelo mundo. Somos seleção, somos Portugal, somos RTP. Mundial, somos nós.
Antena 1, Valpaços e Vila Pouca da Guiar, 94.9.
Antena 1, Liga Portugal.
Boa noite, bem-vindos à Alma Lusa, edição semanal. Um programa de Edgar Canelas.
Coisa boa que pertence ao mundo inteiro. O sorriso é coisa boa que pertence ao mundo inteiro.
Adeus, toiradas à portuguesa, onde a antiga fidalguia fazia frente a um caraça. Adeus, cavalgadas de destreza, adeus própria valentia da gente da nossa raça. Adeus, lindas vésperas das esperas, onde o povo aficionado cantava o fado do lente. Adeus, ó passado, que bom és, pois já não existe nada do que havia antigamente. Recordar esses tempos do passado, vem a tristeza misturada com a saudade. Martirizar meu pobre peito magoado com a nostalgia que dia a dia me invade. Gente antiga, defendei o que nos resta, que pouco a pouco vai perdendo a tradição. Pois nesses tempos em que havia tanta festa, existe agora somente a recordação. Pois nesses tempos em que havia tanta festa, existe agora somente recordação.
Os primeiros cantos e notas desta alma lusa. Trilhos: Jaime Santos, Vicente da Câmara, Lucília do Carmo. Alma lusa, lugar de músicas únicas no mundo, músicas portuguesas, onde o tempo não tem tempo.
Sem hesitar, o teu corpo é certeza. Sou o dia a desvendar, a espreitar sem hesitar, o teu corpo é certeza.